And let me introduce him for the third time. Here is Jesse Streitz. Welcome, Jesse.
Good morning, Wayne. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Well, I see that you did bring along some newspaper clippings that says road trip one way. Northfield man plans bicycle trip across the USA. And I asked you to come back and let's just chit-chat about that. And, boy, you have a whole lot of pictures and articles in here, and I can't wait to hear about it. And I'm going to have to rely on you talking about it because I can't show the pictures, but I can see you were down in the Gulf there because you have a picture of one of those huge oil rigs, just checking out a few things there. I do know that... That you did start on the East Coast and then went to the West Coast, and I'll give you the book, so you can kind of remember what was going on there. And it's 6 minutes after 9 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN. And by the way, we're going to play some bumper music for Jesse. You know, he's a clarinetist and has a longest standing member of the Northfield Community Band. And I am going to see if this is the type of music that you were interested in. Okay, let's give it a try. I think I got the one ready to go here. Okay, got to go like this.
Big band swing music.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up solidly in the rock and roll era.
Yes, you did.
I'm not exactly sure why I have an attraction to the big band sound, but I love the big band sound from the 30s and the 40s. Artie Shaw, Benny Goodman, all those people.
This is all from 1941 that we're going to play.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That will be 77 years ago.
Just prior to the Second World War, the start.
Yeah. You know this one?
I know the song. I cannot recall the name. It could have been Glenn Miller.
I'll give you an A-plus if you can guess it. That's a hint.
That's a hint. No, that isn't a good enough hint yet,
all
I'm
right,
afraid.
Well, if you were going to take a train, which one would...
The Chattanooga?
This is Take the A Train.
Take the A Train.
And it's done by Duke Ellington and his famous orchestra.
Sure.
I got quite a few of them on here that you'll recognize, I'm sure. But we'll get to that bumper music in just a moment. Right now, once again, Jesse Streitz is my guest here this morning. The last couple of times he was here, we introduced him and mentioned the fact that he is the youngest of 11 or 12 or 25.
Ten
siblings. And a lot of us know whom his brothers and sisters are. And we also talked about your getting started in business and that you had done other things. And then you were a teacher at the Northfield High School. You went to the University of Minnesota. Then you went to Mankato.
That's right. Good memory.
Thank you. And you went to the junior high here in Northfield. Then
Absolutely.
You went to the Northfield High School where you played in the band. And, you mentioned who your band director was. And I didn't... That name did not ring a bell with me.
Well, you know, we've had many band directors when you start out. My first band director was James Anderson, and he was not here any longer when you would have arrived in town, Wayne, so I wouldn't expect you to know him, but he was a good band director. He had a son, Gary Anderson, who still lives in a town. No, I guess that's not a son. James Jr., no, Steve Anderson, I believe, was James Anderson's son, who was a clarinetist and played in the city some. Gary Anderson, who I mentioned, is a son of the beekeeper.
Oh, yeah. And what year did you get out of Northfield High School?
I graduated in 1970.
1970. So
yes.
You're one of the freshest classes, maybe the first sophomore class in the high school.
Yes. You know, I think when I started going to the new high school, it was 1 year old.
Okay.
And in the high school, we had Russell Pesla, who was a great director.
No,
yeah, and you would remember Russell Pesla, yeah. Right?
Yes, thank you for doing that. Russell Pesla, and he plays, He still plays, I think.
He plays in the group with Paul Numisto, El Poliet, or Poliet, or something, America's... Yeah, it's a Finnish group, anyway. I should remember the name of it, but it's a Finnish group, and they'll be playing, I think, this year at the One Day Vintage Band Festival.
And I also think that he played in the Koopman band.
I believe he did some. Might have been a few years ago now.
Oh, yeah, it'd be a few years ago. Mm-hmm. But
he became the band director at Concordia.
Really?
Up in Fargo-Moorhead area.
So thank you for mentioning that name, because I thought I would know at least one of your band directors.
Right.
All right. Once again, my guest this morning is Jesse Streitz, and we're going to be chit-chatting, and we're going to be chit-chatting about his trip, and we're going to do that in just a moment, but right now we're going to take a very brief break, and we'll be back in a flash here on the Wayne Eddy Affair.
Next Nurseries and Landscaping wants to thank the Northfield Lions Club for all the things they do to benefit the Northfield community and to promote the saving and improvement of people's eyesight locally, nationally, and internationally. Shop Connects Nurseries in Northfield for the best selection and quality in landscape plants, or to begin working with our designer on a fabulous landscape installation. Connects Nurseries in Northfield, where plants and people meet.
Maria Elena, you're the answer.
He wasn't trying for that one.
No, that one I would not be real familiar with. I'm sure I've heard it, but that's even older, I would think.
This is all 1941.
1941 also.
Yeah, and let's see.
To me,
I'm trying
your
to,
voice is
here's
loud.
The one I want. This is the one I wanted.
Yes, indeed.
Well, he said the title, I think. Yes, indeed.
Yep.
Pete Fountain later did a really nice one of this in the 60s. He did a remake of this. He played Yes, Indeed. And, but I sure remember this song. I don't know who this group is. I would have to guess it was... Benny Goodman or Artie Shaw.
Close.
Tommy Dorsey.
Yeah.
It's a nice song.
I'm going to try to do as many as I can on the Wayne Eddy Affair this morning as we get talking to our guest here. And I would like to admit that we are going to be interested. It's going to be interesting. Okay, Jesse, when did you start your bicycle tour mentally?
Well, that's hard to say exactly, but I suppose serious thought of it began about 2 years before I actually started. So that would have been 2012. I started in the trip in March of 2014. I think I started planning it in my head in 2012. Of course, I had maybe had dreamt about doing something, some major ride before that, but to really start planning it was 2012. I didn't think I wanted to do it alone, but you know, how many people do you know that would want to ride across the country, Wayne?
None.
No, not very many. And so it's hard to find someone, number one, with the time to do it. It's going to take 2 months approximately. So to find someone who has that kind of time to take away from their job or who are retired or whatever was difficult. So I did advertise in the... a national magazine put out by Adventure Cycling. They have a spot where you can advertise for companions to do rides. So I did advertise on that, or put an ad in the back of the magazine. It's free, by the way. It's a free publication. This is a nonprofit group. And I found two individuals, one from California who was an engineer, and one from somewhere, I believe, in Tennessee that was retired and wanted to do a similar ride. And we did start to ride together. We did not finish together. And we could talk about that a little bit. But, you know, when you think about it, how many of even your closest personal friends would you want to spend 24/7 with? It's kind of a difficult thing. What are the odds of meeting someone online, respond to an ad that are going to be compatible where you would want to spend 24/7, 45 days with them? So the odds of that working out are pretty slim. I ended up riding the majority of it alone.
Okay, where did you start?
I started in Florida. Typically, the ride would start in St. Augustine, which is right on the coast. I used the Adventure Cycling Maps. They're a nonprofit out of Missoula, Montana. And they're an advocacy group for bicycle riders around the U.S. Currently, I believe they have mapped out over 50,000 miles of routes across the United States, taking as safe a road as possible. They have three across the country routes. They have a northern tier, which, by the way, it's based out of Seattle, and then it does cut across Minnesota and ends up on the East Coast up in Maine area.
Where does it cross Minnesota?
It comes through Northfield, actually. The riders will pass through Northfield on that northern tier or close by. And then there's a central crossing that cuts across Nebraska and Kansas City and crosses east to west, west to east that way. And then there's the southern tier, which is the one I took. I wanted to go in March, so I wanted a warmer climate. So that's why I took the southern tier. And I like the coast and the ocean, so I spent some time along the ocean for a while anyway. But I didn't start in St. Augustine. I flew into Jacksonville, which was not very far off the coast. In fact, it's typical to dip your rear tire in one ocean, and then when you finish to dip your front tire in the opposite ocean. I dipped my rear tire in the ocean, but it was the intercoastal waterway. It wasn't on the actual coast, but it was very close to the coast. I headed east to west. A lot of people have asked me why it went east to west, since the general consensus is that the prevailing breeze is from the west, and I'd be heading into the wind more. And we can discuss that just a little bit, but there's reasons why I started in Florida. One of the reasons is that I was starting in March. I had very little time on my bicycle during the course of the winter. I rode what we call the rollers inside in my basement. I'd put my bike on the bike rollers and ride that way. But that's pretty boring, and you can only do that for so long. The thing about starting on the West Coast, coming out of San Diego, where I ended up, if I started there, you hit the mountains on day one. You're immediately going to start climbing. I knew I was in no shape at that point in March to be able to start to climb like that. Starting in Florida, the highest elevation in the state of Florida is 700 feet above sea level. So it gave me almost a week of riding on relatively level ground so I could get back into shape a little bit.
So did you have a town that you wanted to reach every night?
Well, you don't plan too far ahead. I certainly each morning or the night before, I knew where I wanted to be that next day. But if you plan ahead very far, almost immediately you're off.
Okay.
There are people that try to map out every day where they're going to be. It never works out. You either get rain, you get wind, you get something that prevents you, you get mechanical issues. You're better off just going and letting things develop.
And bicycle enthusiasts that are listening right now would like to know what type of bike you were riding.
Sure. Generally, people that ride, and I want to point out that anyone could do a ride like this, almost anyone. It's more mental than it is physical. Yes, you have to be in good enough shape to ride a bike, but you can start out riding 10 miles, and next day you might ride 15 miles. So anyone can do this, and people have done this on almost any type of bike. Generally speaking, however, you use a touring bike. It's like a road bike, but it's set up to haul more gear because you're going to be carrying some weight. You're going to have, if you're camping, you're going to have your tent and sleeping bag and all of that gear, which I was doing. But you use a touring bike. In particular, I had a Salsa. Via is the model, and then a titanium frame. So it's a pretty light touring bike. Actually, a Minnesota company manufactures that.
Did they give you the bike?
No, they didn't, no.
I mean, to me, that sounds like I would go out and say, hey, sure, I'm going to make this ride. I want to use your bike.
Yes.
I want to give you any promotional
Sure.
Tool.
Well, you know, I didn't pursue that. There's quite a few people that may be looking for things like that. And, you know, I also could have done this as a charity ride. Some people do it as a charity ride. They pick some cause and they try to raise money for it. But that takes a year of planning in itself.
Yeah.
And I wanted to not have any pressure on me to do that. So I just wanted to ride bike at my own pace.
So who was the guy that you met from, was it San Diego?
Or? Well, one from California. You know, I'm going to forget their name right now. I think it was...
But I mean, just what type of people they were.
Yes. The one that was from Tennessee was a retired gentleman. And he actually ended up being a real fun person to ride with. However, he discovered somewhere in the neighborhood of Mobile, Alabama, that his heart wasn't in the whole trip. So he quit in Mobile, Alabama. Took a bus ride, I think he said, home, back home out of Tennessee. The other gentleman was an engineer. He had taken some time off from his job. I think he was nearing retirement. And... he wasn't real compatible, but he really wanted to make it a race in a way. And that wasn't what it was about for me. It was about stopping and visiting with people and seeing some of these sites. But he really wanted to make it into a race. And well, I'm a competitive person. And I sort of gave in to his wishes a little bit because he's always wanted to be out front. And it sort of bothered me. So I had to kind of take over a little bit. So I missed some things for a little while. But we weren't compatible in riding, and he eventually quit in Austin, Texas.
Oh, he was almost done.
Well, he was halfway.
Yeah.
I was the only one who made it the whole way. Not because I was necessarily the best bicyclist.
Austin, Texas is halfway between Florida and San
Diego?
No,
probably more than that. Probably two-thirds.
Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't know exactly, but it was maybe two-thirds. But,
okay.
I just mentally you have to be prepared for this grueling ride because you know there are going to be days when things don't go well and you feel like quitting. And if you're close by a major airport, you might just load up your bike and fly home. So mentally you have to be prepared to do this day after day. It's one thing to ride a bike for 70 or 100 miles one day or a second day, but to string together day after day, it takes a toll on your body and on your mind. You have to be comfortable in your own self. It's a lot of alone time. Even if you're riding with somebody, riding on bicycles is not real conducive to having conversations. They're either in front of you or in back of you, and they can't be alongside of you because of traffic. So you spend all day in your own body, in your own mind, in your own self. And you have to be comfortable there or things can break down.
Did you have signs on your bike or on your back? Or
no,
on your
I
back?
Did not. No. I had a flashing red light on the back of the bike and I had a flashing white light in the front. Adventure cycling takes great precautions and takes great care, I should say, in trying to map out roads that have paved shoulders and that carry less traffic to make it as safe as possible. I followed adventure cycling maps about 50% of the time, and about 50% of the time I deviated. One thing that they did was coming out of Florida, they immediately pushed you away from the coast and up away from the coast by about 100 miles. And I love the ocean. I wanted to ride along the coast. Now, of course, when you ride along the coast in March and April, you're going to pick up a lot of traffic. And it slowed me down, but I enjoyed there. I could camp at night by the ocean. I could take a hotel by the ocean, and so it was really fun. Once I got to close to New Orleans, I deviated north of Lake Pontchartrain, which is down by New Orleans, and went north there and then got back on adventure cycling maps for a while.
Did you go across that bridge?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
How long did that take?
I don't remember how long. But
were you amazed at how long it
oh,
was?
Oh, yeah. So I know. It's amazing.
I couldn't believe it, and I did it on a motorcycle.
Yes, yes. There are times, Wayne, where I wish I had a throttle on my right hand.
Yeah.
And I could have just hit that throttle and gone, but, you know, it's all in your legs, and you just got to keep going.
Do they have a bike path on the bridge?
There is a... I'm trying to remember. You know, I went through so many bridges.
Yeah.
But a lot of them, a lot of these things were built before bicycling started the game and the popularity again. So a lot of them don't have bike paths. They may have a sidewalk, and they'll allow you to use the sidewalk. or they may paint a stripe down the side. But, you know, you get used to bicycling under the conditions that you're given for that day. And if there's no, you know, if there's no shoulder, you just have to bike in the lane of traffic, in the line of traffic, and watch your rearview mirror. Be ready to head for the ditch.
How many waved at you with one finger?
You know, I had such good luck. I would say less than 10.
Oh?
Yeah. There was a few people who would simply were mad at you for being on the road.
Yeah.
And, you know, Wayne, there are bad bicyclists that go out in the middle of the lane and hold up traffic. But they're bad car drivers, they're bad snowmobilers, they're bad four-wheelers. You name it. There are people, they're not representative of the bicyclists as a whole.
When you made your first stop, were you out of Florida by then?
No. No, I would have been going to, I'm just paging through my book right now, Lakes. I came out of Jacksonville, and then I went to Lake City, to Live Oak, then to Tallahassee, and then Panama City, and then to Gulf Shores. And Gulf Shores is in Alabama then. So then, and that was 4 days in. On the first day, I only wanted to ride 40 miles, but the gentleman from California who had been riding all winter, even though we talked about this as much as the day before, that we're going to take it easy on the first few days so we can get in shape, he just insisted on going 72 miles. And I was not ready for that, nor was the other guy. But I beat him there because I had to. But I did.
Well, how far apart were you? How far in front? How far in back? Or
It would vary. Sometimes we'd try to stick together as sort of a group. But generally, you could be as much as 10 miles apart. You might only be half a mile apart. Sometimes you couldn't see the other person. Sometimes they'd be right there with you. It would depend how you felt that day and how much energy you had and how much you wanted to push it.
So when you beat somebody by 10 miles, is there a meeting place?
Well, we would normally in the morning, we would agree that if we got broke up, where are we going to end the day? And so we knew where we would be meeting. And, of course, in the advent of telephones, I mean, cell phones,
yeah,
we could communicate that way in most cases. But, yes, that's a very good question. It would be easy to get separated and not know where the other person was. You may not always have cell phone coverage, and how you would get back on, I'm not sure. I did post daily to a website and kept a running journal. The website is a common website used by bicyclists who ride across the country, ride across Spain, ride across Europe. It's called www.crazyguyonabike.com. There's probably 1,000 journals posted in there. My site was Head West Jesse. The Northfield News had done an article before I left, and they published that web address so people locally could follow me. But people who just love bicycling go to that site all the time. I had 25,000 hits on my site while I was riding across the country. So a lot of people were following me. They could, not that it was 25,000 people, because they may hit the site multiple times.
Yeah.
But there was quite a following, and I posted daily on how I was feeling, how far I went that day, some of the sites. I took photos that I put online and documented it pretty well from beginning to end.
Head West Jesse.
Head West Jesse. It's still on there. They archive these on the sites. I don't know for how many years. I bet you 5-6 years. So anybody who was interested in reading the journal, it would be Head West Jesse on the www. Crazy Guy in a Bike website.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back. Our guest this morning on KYMN Radio is a gentleman by the name of Head West Jesse Streitz.
Assisted living, conveniently located in downtown Northfield, has got a big case of spring fever. Our tenants embrace life to the fullest, and one way of doing that is cheering on the Minnesota Twins. Sure, we've got beautiful apartments, great food, and all the supportive services needed, but another thing we get really excited about is baseball. To catch up on the latest Twins news and get a tour, call me, Kathy Olson, at 507-650-0141.
The Northfield Lions Club cordially invites you to their annual pancake breakfast this Sunday from 8 a.m. to noon at the Northfield Ballroom. Tickets are just $7 for adults, $3 for children 12 and under, and all proceeds go to all of the projects that the Lions Club supports. The Northfield Lions Club would like to thank these area businesses for their continued support. The Northfield Area Chamber of Commerce and the Northfield Golf Club.
The Army National Guard is committed to keeping the country safe and our community secure. Composed of hundreds of thousands of citizen soldiers from all walks of life, the Guard is always ready to respond to local or national emergencies. We protect the homeland. We're always there when called upon, and in every state and territory, we stand guard for our communities. To learn more, log on to NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
When you need something cleaned, take it to DeForest Cleaners in Northfield. You can drop your dry cleaning or laundry off early or pick it up late. When you take your clothes to DeForest Cleaners, whites are whiter and colors are brighter. DeForest cleans suedes, leathers, draperies, curtains, table linens, and much, much more. For full-service, quality professional cleaning and laundry, take your garment to DeForest Cleaners at 528 South Division Street in Northfield. DeForest Cleaners is proud to support the Northfield Lions for their service to the community.
Pardon me, Roy.
Chattanooga.
Yeah, Chattanooga Choo Choo.
Did you go through Chattanooga?
I was very close, but I did not go through Chattanooga.
You know who recorded this in 1941?
No. Duke Ellington? I don't think it was Duke Ellington.
Pardon me?
I don't think it was Duke Ellington.
No,
Glenn Miller.
Sure. And they had some clarinet parts in this.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Really solid. Big song in 1941.
Pardon now, did you grow up with any of the big band sound? You're pretty much in the rock and roll era, too, though.
I was born in 1941.
Born in 41, and so you remember some of this growing up.
Yeah, and of course...
Your parents played it.
Yeah, but I was more into, in the eighth grade, Elvis Presley
sure.
and Carl
right.
Perkins and,
right. yes.
and the Crickets and all that. So, but I did enjoy that. We danced to that. Our parents would dance to that.
Right, great dance music.
Yeah, okay, absolutely.
Yeah, it's really come back. That type of swing dance.
Yep. It's a 9:34 on 1080 Radio on the Wayne Eddy Affair. And my guest this morning is Jesse Streitz. And Jesse is here because I invited him to come in and tell us about his trip across Southern America by way of bicycle with a couple of people that didn't end up with him in San Diego. But one was relatively easy to get along with, and the other one evidently was a guy that wanted to make it a speed race and wasn't very civil, let's say.
No, that just, might not be the word, but just, I guess I would just say that we weren't compatible. He was a decent guy, I'm sure, in his own right, but we just weren't compatible, and we separated within the first week. And he followed me, I knew, because he would talk to me, he would call me once in a while. I knew he was following my website, because he would know where I was at. So he was following me to see where I was, because he wanted to make sure he was in front of me.
Oh, okay. So he was doing it, but he was the rabbit, and you were the turtle.
Yeah, he always wanted to be in front of me. So, I had a way of kind of solving that little issue.
What was the way?
Well,
okay.
I don't know if I'm real proud of it at this point, but all I'll say is this, is that everybody's got a weakness of some kind. And while I was following and riding behind him, I kept thinking, if this guy wants to beat me, I've got to figure out what his weakness is, because he was in better shape to begin with, because he had been riding all winter in California. And so I found out that when the winds got strong or it started to rain, anything that, let's say, was an adversity would get him down a little bit. and he had to be out front. So I knew that he was following me on my website. So I slowly, over a period of 4 or 5 days, started putting myself beyond where I really was. And I knew he was following that. So pretty soon I had myself good 50 to 100 miles beyond where he was.
In front of him.
In front of him. I really wasn't. He could not handle it. He quit. And then I put myself back on course. I put myself back on
my blog.
Well,
what did you say to your other followers? I'd say
I really didn't explain it. That I didn't want to say that. And I just gradually lopped off some miles each day until I was back on the actual course I was.
Did you have a chance to bat him farewell?
I talked to him on his last day when he said he decided to quit because he had ridden out west before and he didn't want to do it.
Yeah. Was the other guy still with you?
No. Remember, he had quit in Mobile, Alabama. He had quit quite early on. Within about 10, 12 days, he was done.
So now you're all alone.
All alone.
But what was the most exciting part of the tour? First of all, when you stopped, you said you carried camping equipment and a tent.
Yes, right.
And all that. Is that on the bike or in a backpack, or how does that
it's
work?
It's on the bicycle. On bicycles, when you have bags on bicycles, generally they're called panniers. And you have them on the back that kind of drape down over the rear wheels. You've probably seen bicycles with this.
Saddlebags,
right. And they're called panniers on motorcycles and on bicycles a lot of times. And then you might have front panniers. The general, if I had to say the average amount of weight that world travelers on bicycles carry, it's somewhere between 50 and 55 pounds of gear are put on the bike, on front panniers and rear panniers. I did not want to be that heavily laden down. And so I started out the trip at about 40 pounds of gear. I had my tent and sleeping bag, 2 changes of bicycle clothes, something that I could wear in the evening, like longer pants and stuff if I wanted to go to a restaurant or something. And then I carried camping gear, a little stove, a pan, some of that kind of stuff. I determined fairly early on that 40 pounds was too much. So I stopped at a FedEx store, took stuff out of my panniers, mailed it back home. I ended up on most of my trip carrying 32 pounds, and that was good. That's considered very light for most of these types of trips. I sent back my cooking gear. I decided that I could just stop at a restaurant. I could eat cold foods. I didn't have to carry that stuff. I didn't camp as much as I had originally thought. I've thought about why, and I think it was, number one, it was my age. The ground just seems harder than it used to be when I was younger. And by the end of the day, I was just tired. And the idea of setting up a tent and tearing it down in the morning just wasn't that appealing. So I stopped in motels more than I had planned on. I had planned on camping about 80% of the time and about 20% of the time in hotels. I would say it was more about 60% of the time I was in motels and about 40% of the time I was camping.
Did you ever have trouble finding a hotel or a motel room?
Almost never, but that's why you bring camping gear along, because sometimes you just don't end up near a hotel. And you can just stealth camp, where you just get off the road, quietly get off into the woods where no one can see you. It can be as little as 100 yards off a road back into the woods, and no one's going to see you. You use no campfire. You use no trace left behind. You don't disturb anything. If it's private property, people don't even know that you're there. So that's called stealth camping. The other type of camping I would do would be where I would go to a city, a small town of, let's say, a size of Dundas or Cannon Falls or maybe even Northfield. I'd stop at the police department and say, can I camp in your city park? And they would usually say, well, we don't allow camping in our city parks, but that's okay if you do, and we'll keep an eye out for you. And they would come back and buy at 2 in the morning. I'd see their lights come by, and they'd be checking out to make sure everything was safe for me. Or you'd go to a fire department, a local town, and say, do you know a place to camp? And they say, sure, in our backyard. And they'd let you camp in the backyard of the fire department. They may even invite you in to the fire hall and sleep inside. So their people are tremendous. You know, like I said, maybe 10 people were mad at the world and gave me a little grief, but everybody else was just really nice.
Did you get to sleep in a fire department hall?
No, I did not. I didn't ask to, but I slept in the backyard.
Yeah.
And
did they invite you in for a meal?
Yep, absolutely. And then you would, just like I said, that you camp wherever you could at times.
Now, when you say that you're stealth camping and you're going up in 100 yards into the woods or whatever, and you don't leave the sign, is that for safety or is that for being a friend of the earth?
I think it's for respecting the private property owners. You're on their property with no permission, so if you truly were respecting it, and you would try to ask or try to find out, but oftentimes you would have no clue who owned that property. So you just wanted to go in there, respect for them, and not have a campfire. Also, you didn't want people to know that you were there, because you would never know when a carload of young people who wanted to make your life difficult could say, oh, there's somebody camping back there, you know, let's go harass them. So you wanted to be unseen, or you didn't want people to know where
you
were.
Did you ever have a situation where you were concerned or probably in fear because of people wanting to steal your bike or whatever?
Yeah, you know, I never really did. I would find myself not so much camping, but you would be crossing through some major cities at times, not knowing that town at all. And if you would think of crossing, well, let's say Minneapolis, and you'd cross from Woodbury to, I don't know, Brooklyn Center or something, and not know the town, try to cross that town by using no freeways, which you're mostly not allowed on, and make your way through there, you could get into areas of town that were not safe. And that happened to me more than once when I found myself in areas where I should not have been. And so you're a little bit fearful of that. I remember one town, I think it was Baton Rouge, I believe where it was, and I was definitely in a, well, I'll just use the word slum area, but a very rundown area of town. And I was riding through that town, and there was a party going on in the backyard, and they started yelling at me, and I thought, well, what do I do? I have no protection. I did not carry any protection. We could talk about that, but I did not. I thought it was best not to. But they started yelling at me, and I don't know what they were saying, but they were, I thought, maybe trying to get my attention.
Was that a little bit of that French Creole and cultural way people talk down that
yes,
area?
Yes, right, right. There are times when I could already understand some
I have
people.
A story about on the motorcycle in that area.
Yeah. But, well, let's hear that in a bit. I decided that I had two options, really. One was to just jump on my gears, shift to high gear, and bicycle as fast as I could. The second option was to just continue the way I was. And then I decided there were the third option, so I chose the third option, Wayne, which was to turn around, go to where the party was, and join them in the backyard. And they ended up being, and they're all local people down there that probably weren't unemployed in the middle of the day and drinking heavily, but I decided that my best option may be to just go see them. And that by the time I left that party, they would have gladly protected me on the way through town if I had asked them to. They became friends for the moment.
Yep.
Invited me to drink, and of course, Wayne, you might not know it, but I drink no alcohol whatsoever. But they wanted me to have a drink. So I would hold it, and I would pour it out slowly while they weren't watching, so they thought I was drinking.
What was their drink of choice as they handed
beer,
you?
Beer.
Oh, cold beer.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But So there are times like that where you just, you are putting yourself out there. When I was crossing the desert in a very remote area, I may see 5 or 6 cars a day out there. Anybody could stop and rob you, kill you, throw you out for the coyotes, and nobody would ever find you out there. And you'd find yourself once in a while thinking about that when you hear a car coming up behind you, you know. But I don't think that you can be afraid throughout your life. You have to put yourself out there and just hope for the best. And I had no problems.
You mentioned that you jump on the
gears. Yeah.
On the gears. Mm-hmm. And what's the fastest you could pedal at that time?
I mean, well, if you're on, you know, I'm carrying quite a bit of weight, but my average speed from beginning to end was 11.4 miles an hour. I got going over 50 miles an hour downhill, coming out of the mountains in certain areas as I crossed the mountains. But I would say that if I'm on a level ground, I could maintain a 17 to 20 mile an hour speed for 10, 15 miles, and then that's going to start to taper off. So generally, you settle into a groove. And that's the hard thing, is that you have to remember in the morning when you're feeling good, how are you going to feel at the end of the day? So you have to pace yourself. And you learn to just take it easy in the morning, because it's going to get harder by the end of the day. So pace yourself so you can finish strong.
All right, we're going to take another break. Jesse Streitz is our guest on Kim Radio. I've invited him to come back and tell us about his trip across the southern part of the United States from coast to coast.
Do you have an old junker car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
Spring wouldn't be complete without the best 2 minutes in sports. The Paradise Center for the Arts annual Derby Party and Auction for the Arts is Saturday, May 5th, starting at 4 o'clock. Derby-themed games and food, fashion contests, plus live and silent auctions with great entertainment-style prizes, including Breakfast with the King, Joseph Hall Elvis, that is, a private concert with Dr. Hildebrandt, and even a traditional Maine lobster picnic. For more information or tickets, go to ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org or call 507-332-7372 or visit the Paradise Box Office.
Got a reminder, the QB, the quarterback club, still has breakfast being served, at least for the next 11 minutes. And if you can get in there, you can get served right away and enjoy your day, a little bit of a brunch. And, of course, they also have lunch ready to go. And that would be like your flame-broiled burgers or roasted chicken, or perhaps you'd like their fish dinners or their fish sandwiches, their pitas. They got it all. It's a full-service restaurant when it comes to food. And you just gaze at that huge menu above the back of the counter, and you say, Then you look over, and you see the specials on chicken. And you say, well, you know, I think I'll buy a bucket of chicken and bring that back to work for the rest of the gang. The Quarterback Club, locally owned and locally managed for 50 years. Pardon?
This could be Artie Shaw. I'm not sure.
You keep mentioning Artie Shaw.
Yeah, well, I heard that clarinet there, but it's, you know, Artie Shaw might have been a little bit later. Is this all from 1941? Most
yeah.
of these? Yes. Uh-huh.
It's Benny Goodman.
Benny Goodman.
And his orchestra. It's called There'll Be Some Changes Made.
Benny Goodman
yeah.
played clarinet until he was well into his 80s, I know. He was amazing. Artie Shaw was at the top of his game, one of the most popular bands, and he just quit playing. Never picked up the clarinet again.
That's a clarinet there, right?
That's a clarinet there.
Is that a B or a...
That's a B-flat clarinet, and he's playing in the high range, yes. Like the clarinets often do in big band sound.
course, my guest this morning on KYMN Radio is a clarinetist and has been the longest serving volunteer in the Northfield Community Band. And I know he plays clarinet, so I try to find a little clarinet music for him this morning. All right, we left Florida, and we learned about various things. Enjoying that party was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And did you get pictures of that?
No, I didn't take out my camera. You know, and one of the things that I learned, or at least I thought was a good idea, was you didn't want to make yourself a target. And by that I mean if you had an expensive watch, a Rolex, or even a very expensive watch, you didn't wear it. I let myself go physically on appearance a little bit. I didn't shave. You try to look a little rough. You don't want to become a target. You want to look a little bit more like, let's not talk to that guy. And even though I'm on a $3,000 bicycle and I have panniers and I have a GPS and I have a cell phone, you know, all those things I wanted to have along with me, because I would use that GPS on the cell phone and on my iPad to navigate by. But you tried to lay low and just, and you never would respond to traffic. Like if someone gave you the finger and say, we're coming by you, you would not give a finger back because you're just too vulnerable. You might just wave and or give them a thumbs up. Mm-hmm. Because you tried not to aggravate anybody because I'm totally at.
Did you ever have a certain particular restaurant drive-in that you would stop in the
yes.
communities?
Well, you know, for breakfast, I really learned to like the Waffle House. And I loved Southern cooking, so I would try to find a lot of Southern cooking. But generally, I don't know about you, Wayne, but, you know, you can go to the chain restaurants anytime. I really wanted to try to find the small local businesses and eat the local food because oftentimes it's just better prepared. So I would find myself eating at smaller restaurants. I would, in the evening, try to find buffets if I could. I have to say that was one of the good things about bicycling across the country is I could eat anything and as much as I wanted and not gain any weight. I would take in and had to take in somewhere around 6,000 calories a day, or I would just be losing too much weight. I'm burning quite a bit of, you know, quite a few calories per hour. So I oftentimes would order two breakfasts. I would not eat a very big lunch because you don't want to carry too much in your stomach at that time. And then for supper, I would do a buffet and go through the line several times. One of the problems is when you finish the ride, you are used to eating like that, but you're no longer burning those calories.
Yeah, yeah.
So I found that the weight would come back on pretty quickly unless I really watched that. But yeah, enjoying the Southern food and the Southern cooking was fantastic.
I have to agree with you. When I go on motorcycle trips, we would be off the freeway
yes,
for the most part.
Right, for the most part.
And go through small towns, and if it's a cafe,
mm-hmm.
stop in there.
And, right, and especially if you saw a lot of cars parked in front.
Yeah.
You know it was a good spot to go.
Yeah. And just enjoy their food.
Right.
Kind of like going to the Ideal Cafe back in the day.
Right, right. And the owners are there, and they'll talk to you. And you can find out things about their town
yeah.
that you might not find out from a McDonald's. I did stop at McDonald's fairly often because they had free Wi-Fi and I could connect to their Wi-Fi, which would allow me to post on my site and stuff. So that was actually pretty handy.
It's 5 minutes before it is 10 o'clock. We have to take a final break, and then hopefully we're going to get about halfway through your book before the next hour, okay?
Alrighty.
All right. We'll be right back with our guest this morning on KYMN, Jesse Streitz.
Spring is finally here and summer won't be far behind. We all know this means road trips and road construction. The crew at Witt Brothers Service in Northfield would like to remind everyone that they are going to be open during construction while both 7th and Division Streets surrounding Witt Brothers is repaired. Please call 507-645-7242 to set up your appointment and they will let you know what driveway will be open for you to use. Don't forget, it is best to have your vehicle checked out before you head out of town on your road trip for a worry-free vacation.
Get out of my room!
It's my room, too.
Why are you always in my business?
Why are you always a dummy head?
Good one.
Mom, Lauren sarcastically complimented me.
Mom, Emily's on my side of the room. Mom, we can't share a room any longer.
Stop complaining. I have to share a room with your baby brother and your father.
Is your family in need of more space? Let Professional Pride Realty in Northfield help guide you through the process of selling your current house and finding the home that is right for your growing family. Professional Pride Realty, providing good information so you can make good decisions.
Nice trumpet solo here.
Finally.
Zook.
It's been one you've been mentioning all morning.
Well, now, no, it's not Artie Shaw, is it?
Yes.
Well, thank you for playing that.
It's Artie Shaw, and it's called Stardust.
Sure.
And Artie Shaw was a clarinetist?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
I should have known this because I play a medley at the summer band. Almost every summer I do an Artie Shaw medley.
Oh.
Where Brian, the solo clarinetist with the band, and Stardust is one of them. So, I should have known this one.
This is the final dance of the night back in those days.
Sure.
Stardust.
Sure.
You know, everybody slows
down.
Yes. It is 3 minutes before 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest is Jesse Streitz. Okay, Jesse, where are we at? We started in Florida.
Yes, and then we went to Alabama. Then I got into, just a tad bit of Georgia. But then I got into Louisiana. I rode quite a bit in Louisiana because you're just covering a wide part of the state. And like I had mentioned, I did head north of New Orleans. I really did not want to ride into New Orleans. It would slow me up quite a bit. So just as I got to Lake Pontchartrain, I went north of Lake Pontchartrain and then headed on into Texas. And coming into Texas, I came into Texas right around Jasper. Jasper, Texas, on the east coast of Texas, on the east border, I should say, of Texas. I crossed Texas, and then headed Kitty Corner up to El Paso. So I crossed Texas not only at the widest point, but also at an angle. I rode through Texas for 16 days.
I was going to say, in every weather element, too, I suppose.
Yes, and those 16 days accounted for one-third of the trip. So one-third of my trip was spent in Texas. It was that big. I don't know if you've driven car in Texas before, but you get to the Texas border and you think, well, I'm there. And in a car, it can take you a whole day to get from the northern part of Texas down to Houston. Well, on a bicycle, it takes you a heck of a lot longer, and you think you're never going to get across it. Adventure Cycling, whose maps I followed, as we talked earlier, brought me into Jasper, Texas, but then they would send you down to Austin and then over to the Rio Grande and have you ride up along the Rio Grande up to El Paso. But I was visiting a friend in Waco, Texas. He's actually a clarinet teacher of mine who teaches at Baylor University. So I spent 2 days at his house there. So I rode more into the central part of Texas, and then I angled up across the oil country, which I would not recommend, but
boring,
and the truck traffic, the oil trucks and the drilling rigs and all that were tremendous, and those people don't slow down for you. But because I was visiting Waco, it just put me in that position. I now had to angle up. I found out why adventure cycling puts you over to the Rio Grande and up. It would be more scenic. But it just wasn't in the cards for the way I was going.
We're going to talk about Waco when we get back, all right?
Sure, okay.
This is KYMN Radio, Northfield, Minnesota, 95.1 FM, The One, and 1080 AM. And we'll take a brief break for the news, then we'll be back with our guest, Jesse Streitz.
Subpoena seeking
asylum. I'm John Trout. Reports say Special Counsel Robert Mueller was threatening to force testimony from President Trump.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller broached the idea that he would subpoena President Trump during a meeting with the president's personal lawyers in March, according to the Washington Post. It's the latest chapter in revelations of questions Mueller's team is seeking to have Mr. Trump answer, but also significantly leaning toward obstruction of justice lines of inquiry. Bob Costantini, Washington.
Central American migrants being interviewed by U.S. border officials are not guaranteed entry. About 28 of them have been accepted. After processing, migrants are transferred to a long-term detention center. A new report says illnesses from insect bites is on the rise.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says slightly more than 96,000 diseases caused by bites by mosquitoes, ticks, and fleas were reported in 2016, more than three times the amount reported in 2004. CDC Director Dr. Lyle Peterson says higher average temperatures and shorter winters, in part due to climate change, is boosting the populations of ticks, mosquitoes, and other disease-carrying creatures. Scott Carr, Washington.
The Federal Aviation Administration is requiring that more Boeing 737 jets undergo inspection.
The FAA says the new order expands the number of engines requiring inspections from about 2,500 to over 3,700 on U.S. planes. Investigators believe cracks caused a fan blade on a Southwest Airlines jet to shear off last month, starting an engine breakup that left one passenger dead after debris hit the plane. Joe Ramsey, Washington.
The Boy Scouts are changing their name.
We're the Boy Scouts of America.
Nope, not anymore. The Boy Scouts of America say their flagship program for 11 to 17-year-olds will simply be referred to as Scouts, BSA, beginning February of 2019. The new name is designed to be a welcoming sign for girls who will start joining the program next year. I'm TJ Coutini.
On Wall Street, the Dow is down 61 points. I'm John Trout.
Music from 1941, the big band era. My friend Jesse Streitzer is a big band enthusiast. Evidently, Artie Shaw is his favorite band guy. This one, we have to go well into it before the name of the band could be figured out by the instrument he plays. And he's not playing it yet. Oh, he might in the background.
We should just listen to this music instead of having me talk.
My name's Roy.
Well, come here, Roy, and get groovy. You been uptown?
No, I ain't been uptown, but I've been around.
You mean to say you ain't been uptown?
No, I ain't been uptown. What's uptown?
If it's pleasure you're about.
This is Gene Krupa.
The drummer.
Yeah.
Great drummer. Yeah. And he'll have a drum solo in here, are you saying?
Yeah. Let me off uptown.
He was an amazing drummer.
I assume that he has a drum solo.
He probably does. He did in many of his pieces.
Should we wait and see?
You know what they say about drum solos?
No.
They always go on too long.
You guys all have those music jokes
yeah.
that most of us don't get.
I mean, we love drum solos, but they always go on too long.
Yeah. Not for the people standing there watching.
No, it is more fun to watch.
Oh, you've got to call it and let me off uptown.
I don't know if he goes into a solo.
No, he might not.
All right, we've got more of that stuff coming up on the Wayne Eddy Affair as we take breaks. Okay, we are now. Tell me that story about this gentleman that I'm pointing at.
All right. Well, in Waco, I stopped to visit a friend of mine. I studied clarinet with him. He was a former clarinet instructor at St. Olaf College. His name is Juin Quan, J-U-N-Q-I-A-N.
How do you say it?
Juin Quan.
Jin Quan?
Yeah, Quinn. Yeah. And I'm not sure I'm exactly right on the last name, but Juin is his first name.
Juin.
I know that pretty well. Juin, yeah. And he's from Shanghai, China. I could get this a little off, but I believe he came... And he came to America in 1993, I want to say. And he started studying clarinet at Baylor University, and he got his undergraduate degree at Baylor University, and then he went up and studied clarinet and got his master's and doctorates at Eastman School of Music up in New York. Well, I can't think of the name of the town where Eastman Music is, but anyway, he studied clarinet there, and then from there, when he got his doctorates, he came to St. Olaf to teach. I believe he might have been in Northfield for 4 years. He left St. Olaf, and they hired him back at Baylor because they knew about him.
Was he a single man?
Single man at that time, yes. And while he was in Baylor, he had met a gal. I'm not exactly sure of the story, but somehow he was in San Diego, and he met a gal in San Diego, and they hit it off, and he come to find out that she was actually from near Shanghai, China. Of course, Shanghai, China now has 19 million people in it, so you might not know everyone in that town. But she was from a smaller town near there, and they went together for probably a year, and they decided to get married, and they didn't know where to get married at. They had no family here to arrange anything for them. So Lori, my wife, and I said, well, why don't you come to Northfield and get married at the Methodist Church, because they had converted to a Christianity here. Lori became a one-time wedding planner and planned the whole wedding for them. And and then their family came over and stayed with us during this period of time. I think it was about 3 days.
Mom and dad or a whole bunch of
people? Well, actually, mom and dad of his wife, and then his mom, Dwin's mom, could not come over because she has to have dialysis every 2 or 3 days. She has kidney issues. But his father came over, and they stayed with us. And, of course, we've been invited to China by both of those families. Yeah. And while China's never been high on my list to visit, I think we should, since we have people that would be able to show us around. It would really be helpful.
Bring your gas mask.
Yes, I hear it. There's a lot of pollution in, like, Shanghai, those large towns. But anyway, on my bicycle trip, I decided, I did stop about every 8 or 9 days and take a day off because it would start to wear on your body and you would need a recovery day. So I did plan some of these stops. Most of them I just stopped when I could feel it. I was ready for a break, but I wanted to stop at Waco and visit him and spend some time there. So I did spend about 2 days there, and we had a good time. We went to a concert at Baylor, and then I headed out again.
Did you go out to the infamous Waco fire destruction, people die, religious David Koresh?
No, yeah, that branch of Davidian, David Koresh,
I think it
is. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
No, I did not go there. I went to the famous Dr. Pepper Museum. Dr. Pepper originated in Waco, Texas. And actually, as funny as it sounds, it was quite interesting. There's 3 stories to this museum. And it talks about the founding of Dr. Pepper, but it also talks about soft drinks in America. They had pop machines dating back as far as you can imagine, all the different styles of pop machines. And they had an original soda fountain set up where you could sit there at the soda fountain and get your drinks anyway. There's not a lot to do in Waco, so I went to the Dr. Pepper Museum.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
You know, just like somebody going to the Spam Museum.
Right,
in Austin.
Right, exactly, exactly. Yeah. I did find Waco would be the top of my list as the least friendly bicycle community.
And say that again.
I found Waco to be the least friendly bicycle community of any city I bicycled in.
And the reason is?
It was almost like the city decided to make the roads not conducive to bicycle riding. I'm sure they didn't do that, but there was no shoulders. The drivers did not want you on the roads. The whole time riding in and out of that city, I did not feel safe. I was so glad to get to my destination.
Enough said. Now, you must love Minneapolis.
Minneapolis has a lot of trails and throughout the city. Of course, you know that town, so you know where to go to, and maybe I didn't ride in the proper part of Waco either. My most favorite city, large city, to bicycle through is Phoenix. They have bicycle lanes, I think, on just about every street. It was amazing in Phoenix.
Well, they're so wide open, aren't they?
So wide open, right. Yeah. While it's, I think it's 7th or 8th in population in the United States, it is the largest city geographically. It's so spread out. You could bicycle a long time in Waco.
Now, did you go to any baseball games along the way?
No, or? I did not. You know, and I would say I'm not alone on this, but so many people, you'd read their blogs and say, you know, we got so focused on our goal and our destination that we did not take enough time to do a few things. I guess at times I was kind of like the horse headed back to the barn. I was just focused on San Diego, and I should have spent a little bit more time. But, Wayne, it's also hard. You know, if you're in a city and some place that you want to visit is 15 miles away, well, that's 15 miles by bike. There and back is 30. So you'd find yourself not able to go very far. In a car, you'd do that in a second. But on a bicycle, you just couldn't get to some of those things without you know, without adding days to your planned
Were
trip.
Were you on schedule all the time?
Well, since I didn't have a schedule, I won't say I was on schedule, but I knew from the beginning to the end how many days I wanted to do it in. I wanted to do it in 50 days or less, and I believe I was at 47, so I was slightly ahead of schedule. But I had no planned stops, so just I let it develop.
Did you ever actually get out the, you never got out the old cooking utensils?
Yes, I did one or two times, and I just decided I would make something warm in the morning, like hot chocolate or coffee or something, but not coffee for me. But
Did you run into any bicycle camps?
No, but I did, you would find fellow bicyclists who were doing similar things. An interesting little story, down by New Orleans, I met two people from France, and they're bicycling along, and I actually was on a ferry with them as I was crossing over part of the Gulf there. You can take a little ferry across, because it's just, it's the way to get across this one area. And I got talking to them, and they come to the United States every year to ride bicycles for 2 weeks. And, you know, we think of Europe as being so bicycle-friendly and everything. I asked them, why do you come to the United States? They said, we feel that the bicycling in America is the safest place to bicycle, that the drivers are the nicest. And that really surprised me, because we hear about Europe, how friendly they are to bicyclists, and it just surprised me. I ended up riding with them for 3 days.
They spoke English.
They spoke good English. Yeah, real good English. At times, you talk about speaking English. Down in the deep south, I would find at times in these small little areas that the accent was so heavy that it was almost like a different language.
Yeah, it is.
It is like a Creole.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would be asking directions to a town, and they'd say, no, we don't understand what you're trying to ask. And I'd have to point to it on the map. Oh, I was saying the name of the city so poorly in their view that they could not understand what I was talking about.
I believe you, because I've been there, and my wife and I have a scary story about that one time. So most of the time was in Texas. Now, if I recall, Southeast Texas, particularly northeastern Texas, is beautiful. And lots of trees. You don't even think of trees when you think of Texas.
Lots of trees and lots of horse ranches. Beautiful horses. The Texans, I believe, really know their horses. I mean, I grew up with horses, so I can appreciate that. They were some beautiful animals there in these horse ranches with white picket or white fences that would go on for miles. Beautiful settings. And then the roads, there's no trash. Coming out of Alabama and Louisiana, there was so much trash along on the sides of the road. When you hit the Texas border, like, it stops. Just pristine. It was night and day. Not necessarily throughout Texas, but in eastern Texas. It's beautiful there, and I think the people there appreciate that beauty, and they take care of it.
Yeah. Did you ever see any chain gangs?
See any what?
Chain gangs.
Oh, no, I did. But
prisoners cleaning up.
Right, right. I did not, but I passed a lot of prisons in the remote areas. It would be amazing how many prisons I actually passed. And, of course, Baptist churches. There must be a Baptist church every 30 miles. Yep. Little tiny thing, you know, but the Baptist is just huge down there. That was always interesting. So anyway, then you talk about eastern Texas, but then you get to central or even the western part in the oil country where I passed through.
We'll talk about that in just a moment, all right?
Absolutely.
All right. It's KYMN Radio you're listening to. We are the one, 95.1 FM and 1080 on your AM dial. Our guest this morning is Jesse Streitz.
Since 1917, Lions Clubs have offered people the opportunity to help serve their communities. The Northfield Lions Club provides hardworking volunteers as well as financial support for many programs throughout the Northfield community. The Lions Club would like to thank these area businesses for their continuing support. Three Links Care Center, Adam Dowd, attorney at law, and the architects and staff at SMSQ.
Guth Electric, 645-9760. Dedicated to excellence in commercial, residential, and industrial electrical work. Whether you need new wiring for a home remodel or new addition, Guth's knowledgeable, skilled, and experienced technicians are here for all your electrical services. Serving Northfield and the surrounding area, call Guth Electric at 645-9760. Tony, Nancy, and the staff at Guth Electric salute the Northfield Lions during Lions Radio Days.
Have you ever been a Lion, Jesse?
I never was a Lion, though I was
not. Okay, because they started one in Denison.
Yeah, so you were a member, weren't you, for a while, along with my brothers?
Yes, as a matter of fact, one of the proud moments. When I was president, our club had over 100 members.
No, in Denison.
In Northfield. We started in Denison.
You started in Denison, and then it became part of the Northfield.
No, it was Northfield, and then we chartered Denison.
You chartered Denison.
And chartered Elko, New Market.
All right.
Webster, so they call it the New.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Whatever. And
I knew that my brother Joel for sure was in that.
Yeah.
In the Denison.
Here's the deal. It's I want you to appreciate the phrasing, not the instruments. It's a vocal coming up. But the phrasing is just so cool on this song. Are you ready?
All right.
This was very popular in 1941.
I don't want to set the world on fire.
Beautiful voice.
I just want to start a flame in your heart.
I would not be able to guess the vocalist here.
In my heart I have but one desire.
Beautiful piece. Beautiful piece.
And that one is you. No other will do.
No other will do, I suppose.
Yeah. It's the Ink Spots.
I've lost all ambition.
I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a fire in your heart. I just enjoyed that. Frank Sinatra did that song also. But this was back in 1941. The Ink Spots at 19 minutes after 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio. My guest this morning is a gentleman by the name of Mr. Streitz. And Jesse, we are about halfway through your trip. Most of it's going to be in Texas now. And what stories can you tell me crossing Texas? We learned about Waco and the fact that you had the opportunity to meet a former instructor of yours. And you got together with four other clarinetists and had your own concert right there in Waco. You got to go see a Dr. Pepper plant and see all the machines from the past, etc. And I'm glad you did that because Dr. Pepper is kind of behind Pepsi and behind Coca-Cola and all that. And be a Pepper, be a Dr. Pepper. I like that.
You know, it's still a popular drink, but it nowhere near approaches anything done by Coca-Cola or Pepsi.
Do they still sell Orange Crush?
I don't know if Dr. Pepper is the owner of that, but there's certainly still Orange Crush available.
Mm.
But that could be a Pepsi product now. I'm not sure.
Who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, right. But
how about
Yeah, go ahead.
How about Dad's Old Fashioned Root Beer?
Absolutely.
Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember that.
Dad's Old Fashioned Root Beer.
And the other drink that was more popular for a while was RC Coca-Cola.
Oh, yeah.
You can still buy RC, yeah. But it's hard to find.
Then was there, not Shasta, but a drink similar to that?
Shasta was one of the first diet drinks, I believe.
Oh. How about Pepsi-Cola hits a spot? 5 more minutes, you're on the pot. Push the button, pull the chain. There goes Pepsi down the drain.
I don't remember that.
Oh, when we were kids, that was a good little Catholic kid.
Uh-huh.
So
yes.
That was pretty cool. And then there was this one drink that was like 7-Up, and it was like
Bubble
a,
Up.
Like a blizzard. Was that?
Oh, it's Fresca.
Like, yeah, was that it?
It might have been Fresca.
Okay. And their commercial was, it's like a blizzard, and they'd show a man blowing.
I'm wondering if it wasn't Fresca, but I'm not positive about that. I do remember Bubble Up, and I have not seen Bubble Up on the market any longer. Yeah. That was like 7-Up. And then, you know, on MASH, Radar always talks about Grape Knee-High.
Oh.
And that was and that you'll find that still bottled as a classic, a knee-high, you know, Grape Knee-High. And that was a common brand back in the early 50s.
And I always liked 7-Up. That was kind of like a la-ti-da, you know,
right,
if you drank
lighter.
That.
Right.
You know. Isn't that fun going back to memory? And I'm a lot older than you, but you enjoy
Well, I'm catching up.
Well, I hope not. That'd be bad for me if
you
catch
it
up. It's 23 past 10 on 1080. Jesse Streit's my guest. Okay, Jesse, let's talk about Past Waco.
Past Waco gets me into the oil country where there's not much worth seeing there, I will say, other than that you see a lot of oil rigs.
Have you seen them before?
Oh, I have seen them before because my wife and I have driven in Texas and vacationed around there.
Wasn't that a big deal when you first saw
in Oklahoma, and you see those oil rigs and that big weight that goes up and down, up and down.
And they're right in the middle of town on their own school property.
Yes, yes, all over.
Oh, RC Cola, do you remember that?
RC Cola, absolutely.
I do too.
Yeah,
okay.
Royal Crown, and that they used to sponsor Bowling for Dollars, a TV program in the cities. Remember that TV program, Bowling for Dollars?
I remember the one we did on KYMN Radio.
Oh, okay, but this was Bowling for Dollars. It was on TV, and RC Cola was the sponsor of that program.
And we called ours BFD. Bowling for Dollars.
Bowling for Dollars, yes.
And we did it right here in Northfield.
Oh, you did. I didn't know that.
Oh.
Well, anyway, as I was bicycling there, I stopped in one town because it was at the end of the day, and I was looking for a place to camp, and I was at this was right in the heart of oil country, and I was talking to a gentleman at a gas station or a convenience store about a place to camp, and he looked at me and said, no, don't camp in this town. There's too much crime. We had like 4 murders in the last month. We get these transient oil workers. It's a rough area. Do not camp in the city park, even if they say you can. Sometimes I think that people try to scare you a little bit. I mean, they're well-meaning. And so I take some of that advice with a grain of salt because they're just... You know, I find it never as bad. I mean, people would tell you, don't go to Chicago. Well, you can go to Chicago. It's okay. But I decided that I better not. He scared me enough that, and it was the end of the day, so I had to bike about 20 more miles to the next town, and that was another 2 hours almost.
What is the end of the day?
Well, the end of the day is when... You know, that's a very good question. I never thought of it quite that way. I would typically be in the saddle on my bike for 7 to 9 hours. And you just know when you are reaching your limit. You have to look ahead. You don't want to, what we call in the biking industry or in the biking
world.
Segment or world, bonking, where your body just shuts down. And literally, you bonk where you can hardly go another 5 miles.
It's like hitting the wall in
you
a
hit the
marathon.
Wall. You hit the wall. Your body internally is out of energy because maybe you didn't fuel it properly throughout the day, and you let your calories run low, and you let other things, whether it be the the electrolytes run low and you'd bonk. So you don't want to get to that point. You want to be looking ahead far enough that where can I stop where I'll still be okay. Usually you could go a little beyond that, but you don't always know that. So I would say that the end of the day in most cases would be around 4 to 6 on a typical day for me, 4 in the afternoon to 6 in the evening. There are days when you start early. There are days when you start a little later, depending upon the weather and traffic. But I biked on to that next town. I was very glad to reach El Paso, which would then put me up into New Mexico. As I went out of El Paso, I got into New Mexico. It did take me 16 days across Texas. I think I mentioned that already. It was one third of my trip.
Well, I want to hear about El Paso in just a moment, okay?
All right.
We'll take another break on the Wayne Eddy Affair.
Hi, this is Steve DeLong, manager of the Northfield Liquor Store. We invite you to come in and check out our great selection of fine wines from around the globe. With nearly 2,000 different labels to choose from, we can help you find the right wine to fit your taste and your budget, no matter what the occasion. You can find all your favorites right here in downtown Northfield at the Muni, where profits directly support the community.
White's Equine Veterinary Service is a full-time ambulatory equine practice. Our goal is to provide high-quality and compassionate veterinary care to all of our patients. Dr. Paul Weitz started the veterinary practice in Minnesota in June of 2002. Since then, it has steadily grown due to the large number of caring horse owners in our community. Dr. Weitz and his staff salute the Northfield Lions Club for their dedication and commitment to the greater Northfield area.
So tell me, how does a guy lead a band when he's playing an instrument in the song and maybe even a solo?
Right. You know, the conductors, let's call them, of the band didn't do a lot of conducting. You know, even when you watched people...
Listen to this.
Great solo. I don't know if this is a... I would say this is Benny Goodman. But they were conducting by... first off, the band has music. But the conductor or the leader up there usually has no music. Everything is memorized in his head. When he has got his solos, when he's just playing along in the band. Because he is not only soloing, but he's trying to lead the group as well and keep them... on tempo, and so on. But he'll be doing it with his instrument, a trumpet, a little motion of his instrument may indicate the beat, and you don't know that as a viewer. But they're cueing on him. The raise of an eyebrow, anything. But the other people in the band have learned to follow that person. But as far as standing up in front of the group and just conducting, it doesn't happen a lot in a big band. Nobody wants you when you're old and gray. Was that Benny Goodman?
Yes.
It was, yes. His style is kind of unique. There'll be some
changes made. That's the title. Jesse Streitz is my guest this morning at 1029 on 1080 Radio. Okay, let's see. We left away El Paso. That's what we wanted to hear about.
Left El Paso. And
you didn't tell me about being in El Paso. Is that a rough, scary city?
It is. It's right on the border. And you can literally, you're biking along the border for quite a few miles. And you will get stopped in that area quite a few times by the Border Patrol. They'll even stop a bicyclist who, pretty obvious, I'm not someone who's crossed over the border on my bicycle with panniers, but they would stop, and they're just checking on you.
Were they friendly?
Oh, yeah. They were friendly, especially once they once they introduced themselves and saw who you were. But you're, and then you're bicycling along the Rio Grande, and I'll say impressed me about the Rio Grande is there's no water in it most of the time.
I was going to ask you, was there any water at that time?
And they control it. There are times when there's water in there, but it is amazingly dry on most of it, and it's really sad to see that, how much of that water is getting used upstream. Tell it comes into Texas, and there's almost no water in it. You could walk across it anywhere. But I did not spend a night. I did not spend much time in El Paso. I basically bicycled through El Paso and got into the next town, which brought me, I think, into Hillsboro, New Mexico. I was getting into New Mexico at that point, Radium Springs in Hillsboro, New Mexico. And there was a point, I'm trying to remember where it was, but I did not bicycle all the way across the United States. I got a ride for a ways. I was coming out of Silver City on a long ride, and by this point, the weather was starting to get extremely hot, 90, 95 degrees. The pavement is who knows how hot. You are burning 6,000 calories a day, so you're generating a lot of heat in your body, and I reached what I would call near heat stroke. I was getting dizzy. I stopped sweating. I knew that I was not in very good shape. I got up partway up a long climb, and I just went off to the side, and I sat down, tried to find some shade under a mesquite bush.
You were carrying water.
Carrying water. I have water, but it wasn't doing that much good. And some people, actually two pool builders out of Phoenix were driving. Yeah, they had been somewhere in New Mexico building a pool, I suppose, and they come by and stopped. And I mean, a lot of people passed me, but these two young people stopped and said, "Are you okay?" I said, "Well, not really." I said, "Well, what, you know, can we help you?" And I said, "Yeah, you can give me a ride to the next town." It was about 10 miles away. And so they loaded up the bike in the back of their pickup, and I rode for 10 miles. So to be honest, I have to tell people I didn't ride the whole way. I got a 10-mile ride. Their air-conditioned vehicle felt very good. I started to recover. I went to the first place I could. I think I had them drop me off at a McDonald's. I must have sat there for 2 hours drinking fluid and cold drinks. Found a hotel in that town and recovered, and the next day I was fine. I had a similar thing happen in Phoenix, outside of Phoenix, but I was able to push through it. As I got into the desert, and we can talk about that now, I'm getting out of New Mexico. You're only in New Mexico for a little ways, and then you start to come into Phoenix, and Phoenix gets hot. And I had times in just outside of Phoenix, you start to cross the desert as you get near California, and you'd have about 2 days of riding across the desert. I stopped in Phoenix to visit some friends there, and while I was there, I posted some things online trying to find other cyclists who may have been crossing Phoenix at the same time, because I wanted to join up with somebody for safety. I didn't want to be in the desert alone. Never did find anyone who was crossing at the same time. There was two people I had been following me. They were from England. They were riding across the U.S. also. And they're always about 4 or 5 days in front of me. I never did catch them. Well, I did in a way, but not in a good way. But I was following them, and I was hoping that I could catch up with them and ride with them across the desert because they're on the same route as I was. But they decided to deviate and leave Phoenix and go up to see Grand Canyon. They were just about the Grand Canyon when the two of them got hit from behind by a pickup truck. And seriously injured. They both happened to be doctors from New England. One was brought into the hospital in Phoenix and then flown back to England. The other one decided to recover in a hospital in Phoenix because he had broken ribs and stuff. But he was only, at that point, he was only about 600 miles from his destination of San Diego. He wanted to finish so badly, he recovered for about 2 weeks in Phoenix, and he ended up finishing. I did catch him that way, but not in a good way. But it was an old driver. They said he was about 88 years old, and he just wandered off to the side of the road and plowed into the guy in back. That was the one that got he ended up getting flown back to England, and then the next guy didn't get hit quite as hard. But so I could not find anybody to cross the desert with me, and so I just went on my own. 105 degrees, 100 miles between watering spots. You have to try to make it.
I have to take a break.
Yes, I'll talk about the water supply.
Yeah, I want to know about 100 miles between watering spots. We'll be right back.
This is Patrick Clark Carey, chaplain at Three Links Care Center in Northfield. Our mission statement is important to families, residents, and to us. It states, creating peace of mind for those we serve. To me, that means we care about every aspect of each person's life, body, mind, and spirit. Their physical, emotional, and spiritual needs are important to us in creating that peace of mind, so each is safe, secure, and loved under our care. Creating peace of mind for those we serve. That's our goal at Three Links.
John Snodgrass of Edward Jones would like to thank the Northfield Lions Club for their commitment and dedication to the outstanding causes they support. Thanks to the Lions, no child in Northfield is denied eye care or glasses due to financial hardship. Lions also provide funding to a wide variety of causes and provide scholarships to deserving Northfield High School students every year. Thank you, Northfield Lions, from John Snodgrass of Edward Jones.
This is Chris Canelli with Northfield Construction Company. We have been building and remodeling homes and commercial buildings in the Northfield community for the past 40 years. Even though you won't believe it when you look outside, spring has arrived. Now is a great time to start planning your new home or remodeling project. Our experienced team is dedicated to listening to your needs and delivering a finished project that exceeds your expectations. Contact Northfield Construction Company today to discuss your next project.
Use your microphone there.
Yeah. San Antone, there's more to the title than that, but
Rose. You know who does it?
I don't know. Texas Playboys or something like that.
It's
Oh, this might be Sons of the Pioneers?
Bob Will and the Texas
Playboys.
Yeah.
Yes, Bob Will.
San Antone. Where in dreams I live with
yeah.
The man.
He always had that guy in the background that would do that.
The stars all along. It was there I found.
Well, you were talking about Texas, so I thought I'd play a little Texas tune there.
Good idea.
And now we are in New Mexico, which I found to be a beautiful place to ride.
Yes,
and
very nice.
Their freeways, if you cheat, have the most beautiful bridges and overpasses. They're all colorful. So you say 100 miles between water checks?
Well, when I got to the desert area. And I don't want to lead people astray on that and mean that watering or carrying water was too big of an issue most of the time. In this day and age, there seems to be convenience stores all over the place. So generally, I would carry anywhere from 1 gallon to 5 quarts of water on my bicycle. You have to remember that water weighs 8.5 pounds per gallon. And every gallon you add on your bike is another 8.5 pounds, and that causes you to work harder and drink more. So there's sort of a fine point there. How much water do you carry? And do you carry Gatorade or Powerade? Are the sugars good for you? Do you need the electrolytes? There are decisions to make, and everybody has their own idea on that. But us bicyclists in the bicycling world talk about that a little bit. But when I got into out of New Mexico and into the Arizona area where it was so dry and hot, I had to up my number of gallons. I carried 2.5 gallons of water at that point. And where do you put it on your bike? That becomes an issue. How do you carry that? And I didn't carry it all to drink. I would get up at 5 in the morning and start riding at 5 in the morning and try to be done by 1 because it would simply get too hot. 105 degrees, the asphalt is even hotter. You are generating so much heat in your body from burning 6,000 calories right on top of that pavement, you can get overwhelmed and get heat stroke quite quickly. I would stop about, I carried some of the water to wet my clothes down. I would stop, take my clothes off, soak them, put them back on, and then the evaporation would keep me cool. So I had to carry some water just to allow me to do that while maintaining enough water to drink. You have the cough button going. Wayne is having a little cough going on, and he pressed the cough button. I think that's what you call that.
Okay, and we are back. Now, you soaked your suit rather than pour it on you?
Yeah, you'd want to get your clothes pretty well soaked, and I would wear a long-sleeve shirt. I never did mention, and I wanted to do that, is I tried to dress on this trip not like you often see bicyclists dressed in the Lycra and the stretchy clothes. It sets you off as a bicyclist, and it can intimidate some people going into convenience stores dressed in these tight-fitting clothes. So I dress more casually. I wore looser mountain biking shorts that were loose-fitting, and tried to wear shirts that were more normal, that wouldn't look as like a bicyclist. So I had looser-fitting clothes. I also carried a white long-sleeve shirt that I could soak and would keep the sun's rays off of me as much as possible when I was in the desert. I carried it just for that reason. And the long sleeve would carry that, or would hold that water well, because it was a cotton. And then it would evaporate over a period of about an hour and cool you off. So I would soak my clothes. I had I did it in my helmet with a piece of plastic in it. I had a bicycle helmet, and I put a piece of plastic in there, pour some water in there, and soak my clothes in there. You have to understand that there's nobody around, so I could take my clothes off. You might have four or five cars in the course of a day in the desert, so that was not an issue. But, you know, also there's no place to hide in the desert. There's no place to get out of the sun. You know, a cactus just does not provide any shade, and the mesquite bushes only grow about so tall, and they're kind of prickly, so you couldn't get any shade there. It at times became a little scary when you knew you were overheating. There's no way to get out of it. There's just nowhere to go. So you had to be careful, had to plan. You couldn't overexert, but you had to do 100 miles, approximately. I mean, it might be 90, it might be 110, depending upon the day. So it took a little planning. It is a good idea to do it with someone else, but I just never had anybody to hook up with.
But you made it.
But I made it, obviously. I made it. I remember I might have some, of course, pictures don't show up, but I was in the sand dunes.
You did it during the early morning.
I tried to do it during the early morning. I did meet an interesting guy. In fact, I'll just let you look. I mean, there's a young guy out of Phoenix that was out for a casual 200-mile ride, carrying very little water. He was about 28 years old, very physically fit, didn't have an extra pound of fat on him. And I rode with him for a while. I tried to keep up with him, which was almost impossible. But I did ride with him, I suppose, for 20, 30 miles. And he was out for a loop, he called it, out of Phoenix. He was going to do a loop, and he was, I forget the name of the town he headed down to, but there was a famous prison down there in southern Arizona. That they even talk about in Westerns. But anyway, he was headed down to there, and I said, well, how far is that? It was 200 miles he was going to do that day in the desert, which is unusual, let's say.
By the way, is this you?
That is me.
Okay.
That's me bicycling there.
And he took that photo. Yeah, the reason I asked that, I can see the shirt you're wearing, the shorts you're wearing.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And the tan you're getting.
Oh, I got very dark, which, of course, was not necessarily so good for my skin, but I got very dark, yes. By the time I got to San Diego, I was a whole nother color.
So you wore sunglasses?
I wore sunglasses almost all the time for eye protection from bugs and dirt. And in the sand, you know, blowing sand. Yeah. And you can see some of the dust devils
that
come along, and they would just about blow you off the road.
Well, what about when you got in the motel room in San Diego? You took your clothes off, and you stood in front of the mirror before you got into the shower, and you said, my God, I've got dark legs and light thighs.
Yes.
And your face and your sunglasses.
I would
kind of a cool looking dude.
Well, I don't know about that because you definitely had tan lines. I tried to avoid tan lines as much as possible by wearing different lengths of clothing, so I didn't get this really defined line. I would wear shorter and then longer sleeves, so it was a little more gradual. But anyway, yeah, it was too much sun.
Why was that?
Why was that?
Yeah, why would you worry about tan line?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. I have a tan line that said white, black.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why it was. Maybe I just didn't want to. But I had too much sun. There's no. I think I paid the price even now. I think I developed a few more spots because of my burning.
Oh, you have. Does that helmet have? Could the sun get through the helmet onto your scalp?
Bicycle helmets do not provide any shade other than directly on top of your head. And they even have big air slots on them, so you could get burned in those slots. So I would wear a hat underneath, and I would even wear what I'll call a baseball hat underneath, and then put the helmet on top of that to try to give me some shade on my eyes. Then I had a different type of hat I would wear at times. And in the desert, because there's no traffic, I would take my helmet off and put a different type of hat on that I would soak in water as well. Because really, I didn't need a helmet at that point with no traffic around.
So how long did it take you to get across the desert?
Well, there's really only 2 days where you feel that intense, where there's that serious of a desert. Other than that, you have some dry and you have some heat. But there's more towns, there's more places to stop, there's more places to recover, there's more motels, more convenience stores. So there's only 2 days where you really feel this concern.
What route was it? Like route number?
You know, it runs parallel to 10. But it's since you can't bicycle mostly on the freeway, you can't legally bicycle on freeways.
Okay.
I would take a frontage road to the freeway as much as possible because I always felt it was a little bit safer to be near that. But there are times when that road would deviate off of that, and it did in the desert where you're really not near that freeway at all. I don't recall the actual number.
Did you have fear, literally fear?
Yes. Yes, I did. It would have been more fun to do it with someone else, really, it's a safer feeling. But here is this. I don't know if that it might have been 80 or something up there. You can see a highway. Sign.
80, yeah. Historic 80 route.
There was a couple times.
A lot of sand dunes.
Yeah, there was a couple times for just moments. I was on Route 66, just for a little bit. I would pass it. Yes, I want to go back on a motorcycle, Wayne, and do Route 66 from Chicago out west. It would be really fun.
Did you get your kicks?
Well, I had a lot of kicks.
On Route 66?
Yes.
One break to go here before the 11 o'clock news on the Wayne Eddy Affair. We'll be right back and wrap up our conversation with Jesse Streitz.
Do you have a wedding in your future? Is navigating the options for your big day leaving your head spinning? Not to worry. We have good news for you. On Thursday, May 10th, head to the second annual Northfield Area Wedding Vendor Fair at the Gardens of Castle Rock. With over 35 vendors, every aspect of your special day will be covered. From venues to caterers, wedding planners to florists, photographers to DJs, and everything in between. Go to the Gardens of Castle Rock Facebook page to check out the video from last year's fair. Click on the link at kymnradio.net for more information and to register for the fair and your chance to win cash prizes at the Northfield Area Wedding Vendor Fair, Thursday, May 10th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Gardens of Castle Rock.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
When you work with folks you know, like me, Mark Quinnell, you know what to expect. That's why you should give State Farm Bank a try. A State Farm agent that helps protect your home, your car, and your family can help with your banking needs. It's more than just banking. It's banking with a good neighbor. State Farm Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Some products and services are not available in all areas. For information, call me, State Farm agent Mark Quinnell, at 645-4545.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is.
Hey, it's your stomach again. Subway has all new signature wraps, and around the water cooler, the other stomachs can't stop talking about them. Chipotle Southwest Steak and Cheese, Turkey Bacon and Guac, Rotisserie Style Chicken Caesar Signature Wraps. Listen, if I'm honest, as a talking stomach, I don't have a lot of life experience. But I do know one thing. These signature wraps are jam-packed with meat. So what are you waiting for? I'm growling over here. Subway. Make it what you want.
On the Wayne Eddy Affair, we have returned. I had a little deal here, wanted to play on KYMN Radio for my guest, Jesse Streitz. And the CD is going crazy here. So there we go. We'll see if that was going to work. Well, Jesse, if this doesn't work, I'm sorry because I... Oh, yeah, there it is.
This sounds like Pete Fountain. Is it? Yeah, you don't know, but this does sound like Pete Fountain in his style. Great.
I think it's called Clair de Lune.
Okay.
You want to know who it is?
Well, I mean, if it was convenient, I would be kind of curious.
Okay. I just wanted to get that in there because that's a clarinet shot for you. This particular disc comes with no cover or anything.
Okay. Yeah, might not.
And so, let's see. It is Chris Barber's jazz band.
Oh, okay. So it's not a well-known.
Petite Fleur, Little Flower.
Not a well-known.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. All right. Yeah. Well, we're almost going to wrap it up. I am entering California at Blythe, California, is the name of the town. And it's... you know, this has been a long trip. My total trip time was about 48 days, and to know that I'm in California was pretty exciting. I started to believe that I was actually going to make it. I did have to cross the Sierra Nevadas yet, which was some of the hardest riding I had done, so I had one more mountain range to cross, and I was going from Blythe to Brawley, California, and I have in here hardest day ever. I managed to do 89 miles that day. On average, I rode about 74 miles a day. I had some 110-mile days. I had some 50-mile days, but I averaged about 74 miles a day. This was an 89-mile day as I was crossing the mountains. But you have to remember, I've been riding for 40-some days now. I'm in pretty good shape by that point. One of the things I spent here is, that I wrote coming in, Pine Valley to El Cajon, the California. Hooray, I put. I have not jumped in the ocean yet, as I will wait for Lori to arrive on Friday. But I think it is safe to say I made it. I'm actually 10 miles or so away from the beach, spending the night in the town of El Cajon. It was not the easiest ride today, but why would it be? The satisfaction accomplishing this is only magnified by its difficulty. And then I got into some strong winds in the mountains. They were having California fires. And I had been warned about crossing the Sierra Nevadas and getting the strong, unusual winds. And I have to say that it was so bad. And I'm on a freeway because the only way to cross the Sierra Nevadas at that point is on a freeway. And they allow me to bicycle about 20 miles on the freeway. And then I have to get off. It was so windy that I really felt like I was going to be blown into the traffic. I thought this is where it's going to end. I was walking on my bicycle. I was hanging on to it, trying to keep it from blowing out of my hands. I don't know what the winds were, but they had to be in the 70, 80 mile an hour range. It was unbelievable. I didn't think I was going to make it, but I had no choice. I couldn't turn around. So I just walked my bicycle for 20 miles as I was trying to hold on to that bike from blowing out of my hands. Finally, once I got off the freeway, it dipped down into a valley. I was through the Sierra Nevadas, and it quieted down. But, you know, by that point, you think that you deserve a break. You bicycle across the country. You have 2 days left. Maybe you'd get a break, but it was a hard day. But I could, when you get into El Cajon, you can actually smell the ocean. You're still 10 miles away, but you can get that saltwater breeze coming up. And then when you get to the top of the mountain, you can see it. And it's quite a feeling. It's just hard to describe. You know, I read some blogs on Crazy Guy on a Bike, and they talk about how when they near their end of their trip, how they get this sad feeling because they know it's over. Not me. I was happy. I can understand what they're saying. It was an adventure, but I was ready for it to end. I hadn't seen my wife for 48 days. I was really ready for it to end. And then you come into San Diego, and you have to make it through San Diego yet, because I'm coming in from the east, so I still have to get through San Diego, which is a lot of trying to find your way through San Diego by not going on freeways was a little difficult. And we ended up in Dog Beach is where we met. Lori was at the end of the line. She had flown out to San Diego to meet me. And the last 2 miles or so was on a trail leading down to Dog Beach. I see Lori. I'm able to dip my front tire in the Pacific Ocean, and I know I've made it. So it was quite a trip. And I do, at times, go around and I'll talk to civic groups or something and talk about my bicycle trip and bring, I have a slide presentation I can do, or an electronic slide presentation now. So it's fun to see some of the pictures, too, because people like pictures, and you can describe what's going on. A little hard to do on the radio.
Well, no, you did a wonderful job. One of the things is an obvious question is, what next?
What next? You know, I've talked about quite a few different things, but right now I feel that I want to bicycle across Spain and across that country. However, last night I was reading a journal of someone who has ridden across Greece. So now I'm thinking maybe I'll do Greece because of the history of Greece prior to the Roman Empire and in Italy. So that might be fun to hit Greece.
Well, there was a couple of guys that did a walk around the world from Wasika.
Wow.
And one of the things that they became endangered when they were going through the Middle East.
Yes.
Of robbers, murderers, blah, blah, blah.
And even worse now.
Yeah. But what about Greece, robbery? And
well, there's always those situations. There's no doubt about it. And you do your research, and you try to find, or you try to avoid those kind of danger areas. But again, you'd put yourself out there. You're at the mercy of the people, and you just go for it. Life is too short to worry about those things. Just go for it.
Have you ever thought of the trip through the beautiful parts of Europe? Switzerland, and
I know that I would love to do Germany, Ireland. You know, John Stahl bicycled in Ireland. He spends, I think, a week or two.
Former mayor of Northfield.
Former mayor and Malto Meal,
yeah,
President Malto Meal there in Northfield or at the plant, and I was just talking to him the other day, and he talked about his bike ride in Ireland, and he had a great time there.
I imagine it'll be a little cold.
I'm not sure the time of the year, but I believe they had decent weather. It was the summer, him. I think, or spring. I'm not sure.
So
you could have him on sometime and talk to him about his bicycle ride
I
in Ireland.
Yeah, because I've had him on for.
I'm sure you have.
But what about locally? What are you going to do?
Well, locally,
what do you do?
You know, I ride bicycle trails, and we try to go camping, and we'll take our bicycles along. In the summertime, I just try to ride around the area, spend as much time as I can on my bicycle. I still enjoy it. I don't bicycle much in the winter. I admire people who get their bikes out in the winter, you know, like a Peggy Prova, and you'll see her out riding in the cold weather. Those are the true bicyclists. I'm more of a fair weather.
What route do you like and enjoy the most from Northfield?
Sure, around the area.
A loop.
Yeah, I really like to ride out. I think it depends upon where you're coming from, but when I leave my home, I like to ride to near Strand Pass, the Big Woods. Then I head across 56 and I head down into the Sogan Valley. I love to ride in the Sogan Valley and then come back into Northfield through Denison.
Do you ever use that very expensive bicycle trail from Cannon Falls to...
I'll bicycle on that, especially if I have someone along with me who isn't comfortable riding on the road. There's a lot of people who like to ride bicycle, but they're just not comfortable having traffic come up behind them. And that trail allows you to get away from the traffic, but still ride.
Well, I'm going to have to wrap things up here, Jesse, and I really appreciate your sharing that trip with us. It's been very enjoyable.
It was a fun time, and I hope that some of the listeners enjoyed hearing about it.
Maybe we'll get together again and talk about something else.
Who knows? Maybe I'll go across Greece and we can talk about that.
Yeah, well, that would be in the future.
That sure would be.
Let's see. What do I do now? Oh, yeah. I got things all set up here. Thank you again, Jesse Streitz. This is KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota, 95.1, The One, and 1080 AM.
Affordable living could be yours at Northfield Manor. Located on the campus of the Northfield Retirement Community, the Manor offers HUD-supported one-bedroom apartments for seniors age 62 and older or for persons with a disability. If your annual income is less than $43,750 per year, you could qualify. Northfield Manor tenants enjoy all the amenities that the Northfield Retirement Community campus has to offer. For more information, call 507-650-7332 today. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
Elite Auto Care.
Here's the difference.
Find factory trained techs for Chevrolet, Volvo, BMW, and more. And all repairs and service completed are reported to Carfax to help you maintain higher vehicle value. Plus, with winter on the way, you can count on Elite Auto Care for Cooper tires, AC Delco batteries, and the best brands available to help ensure your roadside assistance is used only
if you run out of fuel.
That's the Elite Auto Care difference. Open 6 days a week, 517 Water Street South by downtown Northfield, and online at EliteAutoCareMN.com.
The KYMN Climate Show is a monthly feature here on 95.1 The One and AM 1080, discussing changes in climate and the science behind it. And now, your hosts, Alan Anderson and Bruce Moreland.
Welcome to the KYMN Climate Show with Bruce and Alan, where we discuss climate issues in the news and then dig into the stories behind those stories. So, Alan, what have we found in recent weeks?
Well, this week we had a really interesting story. Chevron Oil Company attorney representing five different oil companies said in a California federal court at the end of March that the companies accept the scientific conclusions that humans are causing climate change due to rising CO2. This was in response to lawsuits that accuses the five major energy producers of misleading the public for years about their role in global warming. And so let me just repeat that for emphasis. Chevron, representing five oil companies, accept the scientific conclusions that humans are causing climate change.
And let me just point out that they know that they can't win this court case based on denying the science. So what they're doing by stipulating to this, which is what they've done, is they've said, we aren't going to argue about the science, it's facts. They're changing the nature to, so they can spend their defense on claiming not to be to blame for it.
Right. And in a way, it's old news. In June of 2017, ExxonMobil, other oil companies, and another of group of corporate giants announced that they now are supporting a plan to tax carbon emissions. This plan was put forth last year by a group of Republican elder statesmen in the GOP Climate Leadership Council, led by James Baker, George Shultz, Hank Paulson, and others.
That's right. And you might remember that carbon tax is something that we've talked about in the past, and we'll probably be hearing a lot more about that. Okay, our second story was, I don't know about you, but I'm looking out at, 15 to 8, at the time of taping, we're looking at 18 inches of new snow. Is this normal? And it seems like it's really cold, and everybody's kind of moaning, where's spring? Well,